So he ran on ahead and climbed up a sycamore tree to see him, for he was about to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, hurry, come down. I must stay at your house today. So he hurried and came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they all grumbled. He has gone to be the guest of a man who is a sinner. And Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor. And if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold. And Jesus said to him, Today salvation has come into this house, since he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. As they heard these things, he proceeded to tell a parable, because he was so near to Jerusalem, and because they supposed the kingdom of God was to appear immediately. He said, therefore, a nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom, and then to return. Calling 10 of his servants, he gave them 10 minas, and said to them, Engage in business until I come home. But his citizens hated him, and sent a delegation after him, saying, We do not want this man to reign over us. When he returned, having received the kingdom, he ordered these servants to whom he had given the money to be called to him that he might know what they had gained by doing business. The first came before him, saying, Lord, your mina has made 10 minas more. And he said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. Because you have been faithful in a very little, you shall have authority over 10 cities. And the second came, saying, Lord, your mina has made 5 minas. And he said to him, And you are to be over 5 cities. And another came, saying, Lord, here's your mina, which I kept laid away in a handkerchief. I was afraid of you. You're a severe man. You take what you do not deposit, you reap what you did not sow. And the master said to him, I will condemn you with your own words, you wicked servant. You knew I was a severe man, taking what I did not deposit and reaping what I did not sow. Why then did you not put my money in the bank, and at my coming I might have collected it with interest? And he said to those who stood by, Take the mina from him, give it to the one who has the 10 minas. And they said to him, Lord, he already has 10 minas. I tell you that everyone that has, more will be given. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. But as for these enemies of mine, who did not want me to reign over them, bring them here and slaughter them before me. May God bless this reading of his word. Zacchaeus is one of my favorite characters in the New Testament. And I think you'll see why. Maybe you already see why. A guy who climbs a tree to see Jesus. What a fantastic story. But I want you to think a little bit about yourselves first. Have you ever thought to yourself as you look out on the road and you say, there's that rich CEO driving his Mercedes. Boy, if I only had the opportunity that he has. If I only had that opportunity to do his job and earn that money, I'd be set. Maybe you look beyond that. Maybe your tastes run a little more expensive or not quite so expensive or in different ways. But I think we all have tendency to do this, to think to ourselves, boy, if I only had this, if I only had that, I would be set. We're prone to forget a few things, at least along the way. We're prone to forget that in order to earn money, it generally does take hard work. Maybe we've inherited it, but even the person that inherits his money has to work to keep it and be wise with it. We're prone to forget there are many steps in between us and the power of the person that earns a lot of money. Even if our rich CEO was born into a wealthy family, you see, he still have a lot of work to do to get to his ranks. He had a small responsibility at first. Now he's going to get a larger responsibility. And maybe there's even someone over him. And just as we read in Ecclesiastes, don't be surprised over the small injustices that happen at the bottom, because every small town has its mayor. Every mayor has his county official. Every county official has his state government. Every state government has the national government over that. We see the same thing around us today, don't we? The small things reflect the big things over them. And so as we look around and we see the people that are succeeding, what do we think? One of the most striking things about Jesus' ministry is how he takes earthly wisdom like this, because after all, this is earthly wisdom, how you acquire rank and wealth and that sort of thing and work your way up. This is earthly wisdom. And he's going to apply it now to a very spiritual point. Money throughout the Bible is used this way. We see that money is a fairly small thing in the eternal sense. And yet money has a much larger meaning in the more spiritual sense. The first thing that we meet, the first person that we meet in this passage is a man who has a lot of money and who is also responsible spiritually. Isn't this interesting? We get a man who's not only rich, but knows how to be rich. Now, Jesus has said earlier that it's more difficult for a rich man to enter the kingdom than for a camel to strain itself through the eye of a needle. Yes? So how does this rich man do it? Well, he's both rich in terms of money, and he's rich in terms of spirit. And I think it's significant that Jesus, at the end of this, mentions Abraham himself, because Abraham was also rich in money and rich in spirit. How do we do both? Well, let's think about this scene a little bit. This scene is almost an interlude to Jesus' main purpose in being there, isn't it? What is Jesus' main purpose in being in Jericho? Well, Jesus' main purpose in going through Jericho is to get somewhere. He has to go through Jericho to make it to Jerusalem. Why is he going to Jerusalem? He knows the reason. His disciples don't quite know the reason. They should, but they haven't listened. Jesus is going to Jerusalem so that he can be slaughtered like a lamb on a sacrifice. But yet, though he has this knowledge, he is still doing his Father's will by preaching and teaching, and he has one more person to convert along the way, doesn't he? Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus is waiting for him. Jesus is on his way to his death, but he continues to minister and to do wonderful things and to bless Zacchaeus tremendously. Jericho was the gateway city to Jerusalem. You had to go through it to get to Jerusalem. You went up the valley. Once you're through Jericho, the way the geography works, you have to walk up the hill to get to Jerusalem. In the Psalms, we read of going up to Jerusalem. That was literally true. You had to do this. And you might remember the ancient Israelites had to first get through Jericho before they could enter the Promised Land and do the rest of their work that God had called them to do there. And clearing the land for the Israelite settlement. But think about this for a moment. What does it mean that Jesus continues to teach and to preach and to convert and to be such a marvelous figure in the context of knowing that he is going to die? The very week he is about to die, he is engaged still in his ministry. Zacchaeus, who is he? Well, we know several things about him which are very endearing, don't we? Was he a tall man? No, he was not a tall man. He was, in fact, short. Well, this is significant, right? Because he desperately wanted to see Jesus. Now, I want you to think a little bit about the logistics, shall we say, of the situation. People in these days didn't wear shorts or jeans, did they? Instead, they wore robes, and they would have something wrapped around which would be sort of the equivalent of underwear, but then there would be a robe over that. It's a very cool thing in a hot climate. But Zacchaeus is going to climb a tree, he decides. Is this a logical decision? Not particularly. He's a grown man in a robe, and he's going to go climb a tree. Wow, this guy must be excited about something. Now, remember when you were a kid. Some of you don't have to remember. Some of you already are, okay? You ever seen a parade walk down the street? Sure, some of you have, right? parade, walks down the street. Have you ever been in a parade which is big enough that it has people crowded around so that you can barely see what's going on because there are so many people in front of you? Well, one of the disadvantages of being a kid is that you're short, yes? Okay? This can be annoying. Well, if you happen to have Daddy along, you can get on his shoulders and see the parade, right? Well, what if Daddy's not there? What is he going to do? Well, Zacchaeus is going to find something to climb up so that he can see, so he can look down and see who this Jesus is that he's been hearing about. And what I want you to know about Zacchaeus is that he's a kid at heart. He is a kid. He climbs a tree when he wants to see Jesus. He doesn't let his adult inhibitions get in the way. He goes and climbs a tree. He's excited about this. He's so excited about the fact that Jesus is there. He's not going to let anything stop him. So he goes and climbs a tree. He wants to see what's going on. He doesn't let adult thoughts about how crazy it is to climb trees in robes dissuade him. And Jesus, oh, this is marvelous. Jesus stops in the tree. Of course, Jesus knows what's about to happen. It must have been very interesting being a minister as Jesus, because he could see the unbelief and the belief, shake his head at the unbelief, praise the belief. Here's a man who's so eager to see him. Up in the tree above him, he looks up. There he is, Zacchaeus. And you can imagine Zacchaeus, all he's trying to do is just catch a glimpse of Jesus, but something far more exciting happens at this point. Far more exciting. He'd hardly believe his ears. Not only does he just see Jesus, he gets to offer Jesus hospitality. Jesus says, I'm coming to your house for dinner. Get ready. I'm coming over. It's interesting. We can almost, after reading the book of Luke, we can predict the next line, can't we? What's the next thing that happens in Luke? This is almost just kind of a parenthetical statement, but, oh, people grumble. He eats with sinners? Boy, how many times have we heard that before? This is something that clearly goes along with Jesus every time he goes somewhere. He eats with sinners? Why are they complaining about Zacchaeus? Well, the secret to that is in the first sentence, second verse. He was a chief tax collector and he was rich. Those two things together tell an awful lot to us. Zacchaeus, you see, wasn't rich because he was an honest businessman. Zacchaeus was a tax collector, not just any tax collector, mind you, but the chief of tax collectors. If you think about the hierarchy that had to be in place, he wouldn't just be the man out in the street demanding the money from the people at the tables like Matthew was. Remember how Matthew, the disciple, was a tax collector and Jesus called him from the table he was sitting at? That's not who Zacchaeus was. Zacchaeus sat back in an office someplace and he counted the money that were brought to him by his underlings. Can you imagine somebody more despised than this? Not only is the one that's stealing the money, he's the one that's stealing the money for the people that are stealing the money. Wow. He was not well liked. He probably extracted bribes from his underling tax collectors. He probably managed to jack up the tax rate to his own advantage. There were lots of ways tax collectors in those days made money. Essentially, what a tax collector did was he bought a franchise from the Roman government. He would pay the Roman government $1 million. And the Roman government would say, you now have the right to collect taxes from the whole city of Jericho and every farm around it. That's probably what Zacchaeus had under his purview. And every one of these people has to pay taxes through you. $1 million would go to Rome. Rome was happy. Then Zacchaeus got to go to work. Do you think he collected just $1 million? No. He collected $1.5 million. Or $2 million. But he made sure that his pockets were well lined. And that Rome was well compensated. And that every palm was greased around him because he was a slick businessman. And you can imagine that being a tax collector did not put you in an enviable position as far as being liked. But boy, it made you rich. Zacchaeus was rich. But Jesus can see the heart. And this is what the crowd around him can't see. The crowd around him thinks this man is just a complete reprobate. He's a sinner. He steals. But Jesus knows the heart. And Jesus knows the heart, and he knows Zacchaeus' eagerness. He knows Zacchaeus is so eager, he wants to come see him. So Jesus says, well, let's work with this. And what Zacchaeus does next shows his devotion to Jesus even more clearly. What does Zacchaeus do? I don't imagine the crowd that was starting to boo and hiss expected this. Zacchaeus stands up and very publicly says, I am going to give away half my money. Jesus didn't require that, did he? Did Jesus say anything about giving away half his money? Jesus said no such thing. But Zacchaeus does it. He's generous because of his happiness. And beyond this, to correct any of the injustices which I have done, I'm going to pay restitution to my victims. This is something which is set out in the law in Leviticus. Paying restitution is the biblical way to overcome the sin of stealing. And there are several different penalties that go along with it. Typically, you'd have to pay back 20% more than you stole. If it was just a simple case of thievery, or there's some understandable something about it, you'd have to pay back 20% more than you stole. If you stole $10, you'd have to return $12. That's what restitution is. I really wish our modern law today would take this approach. It's a solid biblical approach for people who steal. They pay back more than they take. If it's an aggravated case, then you pay back more. The maximum penalty exacted in Leviticus is to pay back 4 times. Zacchaeus here is admitting to an awful lot. He's admitting to the fact that he has been a thief and he is paying back the maximum required by the law. Now, I don't envy the accountant that has to deal with this, because Zacchaeus is going to be paying back an awful lot of money to the city of Jericho at this point. And you can imagine that there are people who are going to be very grateful at this. There are also people who would be a little suspicious, saying, is this guy really on the level here? Is he really going to carry through with this conversion? What are we going to expect? Well, time will tell. According to Jesus, though, what Jesus does, this is a very genuine conversion. And the fact that Zacchaeus is volunteering to pay back 4 times the amount, showing the maximum amount of guilt, shows very clearly that his heart is in the right place. It's important, though, to notice what Jesus doesn't say. Jesus doesn't say, okay, since you've given back this money generously and been good with your money and generous, okay, now we can allow you into the kingdom of heaven. Not at all. The son of Abraham part, where Jesus says, now you are a son of Abraham, acknowledges the fact that Zacchaeus' spiritual accountability is now taken care of. His monetary accountability is pretty much a given. He's a slick businessman. He knows exactly what he's doing with money. What hasn't been taken care of in his life up until this very point is the fact that his spiritual life is a shambles. He's very rich with money, but he's not rich spiritually. At this moment, he becomes as wealthy spiritually as he was with money. He becomes a son of Abraham, rich in spirit. Salvation has come to Zacchaeus' house. Jesus came to seek the lost. Do we think of the rich as lost? I know most rich people don't think of themselves as lost. Most rich people are pretty sure they've got it made in the world. Made in the shade. Life is good. But Jesus came to seek the lost. And we don't know anything about what led up to this, whether Zacchaeus was having doubts in his heart, whether he was getting dissatisfied with having money and wanted something more and knew that Jesus was telling of a spirit of God which would give him the right heart. We don't know that. But one thing is certain. At this point, Zacchaeus falls head over heels for the message that Jesus is giving of forgiveness. And as fun as this story is, Jesus refocuses us on his work in the world. Jesus came to seek the lost. And Jesus is delighted to spend time with one that is so happy to be found. The episode functions, I think, in a couple of ways for us. It's a reminder of a wonderful example of what should happen when a person meets Jesus. And if you've ever known somebody that's met Jesus for the first time, there's much happiness and joy there. And whether they're as exuberant as Zacchaeus or not, the joy that is there is really wonderful. The excitement. Jesus loves to spend time with people who are so happy to be found. Jesus was near Jerusalem. Jesus was about to die. But yet Jesus takes time out of this to remind us of the joy that there is in finding the lost. Now, what else does this teach us? Does this teach us that once we convert to Jesus, we should start giving half of our money away? Well, there are some cult leaders who have taught exactly this. But no, this is not what it means. In Zacchaeus' case, it was appropriate for him to do this because he was rich and had not acquired his wealth exactly in an honest way. So I don't suggest that this is what should happen. But the joy that's here is wonderful. And there's another thing, too. Jesus doesn't just say, wonderful, you converted. I'm going to move on to Jerusalem now. He spends time. And he takes the time to get to know Zacchaeus and to have a meal with him. And you can imagine the conversation that went on over that table is a very interesting conversation. Zacchaeus was left with a great deal of knowledge that he did not have before about who Jesus was and what Jesus wanted him to do. And so I think another thing we can get from this is the idea that when somebody gets to know Jesus for the first time, that's not where it ends. But there's teaching that needs to take place afterwards. And we don't simply leave a person hanging once that euphoric experience is over, where we have this tremendous happiness. We don't simply let that be the happiness that they remember that's in the past. But rather, there's teaching that needs to happen at that point and continual attention to their spirit. Why does Jesus then go to teach Zacchaeus using the parable that he does about the minas? Well, Zacchaeus knew about money, right? What better way to teach about spiritual things than to use an earthly thing that is very familiar to Zacchaeus? Minas were a very large unit of money, worth about 3 months' wages, they say. So let's say a mina is worth $10,000, roughly. That being somewhere around 3 months' wages for most people. So nobleman goes into a far country, and he gives away 10 minas. Now, it's a little unclear in the original language what he's doing with these, but it's pretty clear if you think about it what he's doing with the minas. He gives away 10 minas to 10 people. Each person gets one mina. One mina by one person is turned into 10, by another person is turned into 5, and another person simply keeps it wrapped up in a handkerchief. Now, you've probably heard another parable which is similar to this, which is the parable of the talents. That's back in Matthew, and Jesus tells this. It's a very similar parable. It's different in some interesting ways, but it's similar to this one. The parable of the talents, Jesus gives away several different amounts of money to people. In this parable, he gives away the same amount of money to everybody. And so the parable of the talents, talent has come to mean something that God has given you, a gift that God has given you. And he gives different people different amounts of gifts, parable of talents. Here he gives the same amount to people. And I think both things are true with Jesus. Not only does he give gifts differently, but he also gives us a tremendous gift, which is his spirit, which we are then to invest, so to speak, and to bring about a return. Both things are true in the kingdom of God. Not only are we given different amounts of talents, but we're also each given a tremendously valuable gift, no matter who we are. So don't think just because God has given you a small talent in one area that he hasn't given you a tremendous gift. He has. Who's the king? The nobleman. Well, that's obviously Jesus himself, right? And the servants, there are the ones that he has gifted, that he's given money to. Those are each and every believer that is among us. And Jesus gives, the nobleman gives these minas, those valuable coins, to the people in order that they can accomplish things on behalf of the king. The king's command is very simple. Put the money to work. Do business. If you have money, you see, that sits in a safety deposit box somewhere, it doesn't do anything. And isn't it interesting how Jesus uses this clear example from ordinary life and applies it spiritually? What good does it do us if we put the light that we've been given under a bushel? What good does it do us if we take that mina, that $10,000 coin, and do nothing with it? It doesn't do anybody around us any good. It doesn't do us any good. Because when the king comes and says, all right, give me back what you have earned through this, we have nothing to show for it. So why be so hard on this third servant? The first two servants do what they're supposed to. Now, I'd like to know what investment vehicle they're using to get a 10 times return and a 5 times return. That's almost unheard of, right? And I think at that day, that would have been pretty much unheard of, too. So when Jesus uses this example with Zacchaeus, he says, wow, these guys know what they're doing, okay? But the Spirit of God is like that. When we start investing, so to speak, the Spirit of God and the people around us, marvelous things happen. And it's amazing when the Spirit starts moving, the multiplication of the church that happens, both in terms of our understanding and our excitement about the gospel, but also in terms of the number of people. At various times, God gifts the church. When people start coming into the church, we find a tremendous, tremendous explosion of the Spirit of God. It's not limited to simply what we're given. We're told to use it outside the church as well. So this third servant, what does he do wrong? Well, you'd think that at least the preservation of capital is worth something, right? He hasn't gone and squandered the money. He hasn't gone and, you know, spent it on riotous living or something. What has he done instead? He's put it in a handkerchief. But that's not really what's so bad about it. What's so bad about what he does is his attitude. He says to Jesus, to the nobleman, I was afraid of you. You're a severe man. You take what you did not deposit, you reap what you did not sow. What is he telling Jesus? Well, let's think about this a little bit. If we go up to Jesus and say, you know, God, I know you've given me these tremendous gifts, but you're a pretty hard guy to work for. I'm not sure I can do anything. What's God's response going to be? You've missed the point. Do you think God relies on us because we're so reliable? No. God relies on us because He has given us a job to do, which He will then give us the ability to do. So when we tell God, no, I'm not going to do what you told me to do, you've just insulted God and told Him, God, so sorry, but your plans are wrong. Mine are better. Your plans are wrong. I don't want to deal with the trouble that your plans bring. He accuses, in fact, the king of stealing. He says the king reaps what he doesn't sow. In other words, what Jesus has done is not his own doing, so he might as well not even work for him. What sort of attitude is that? He accuses Jesus of being a hard master. Well, this is interesting, too. Because I think anybody in the position of Zacchaeus would recognize right away, this is the master we want to have. This is the master that will truly bring about the sort of happiness and result that we want in our kingdom. The third servant has no motivation to work on behalf of the king by using the king's money. He distrusts the king completely. He doesn't appreciate what the king is doing. And so we can see from this parable that the way we use our gifts is a test. Jesus is looking for people to build his kingdom. And in fact, hiding your gifts this way is going to be a sure sign that you're not completely on the right page with Jesus. There's also here the hints about the way that how we use our money reveals something about ourselves. Zacchaeus was not required to give away his money. He was not required to give payback 4 times what he stole. But he did anyway. And this tells us something about his heart. It tells us that he has become a generous man with Jesus. It tells us that money no longer has a hold on his soul. You know, it's interesting, even in the modern age, the way we use money reveals something about our habits. And in fact, people have gotten kind of upset about the fact that credit reports are now being used to set car insurance rates. And I'm not sure this is a great idea, to tell you the truth, but let's use it for an illustration right now. Car insurance and how you handle your debt wouldn't ordinarily be thought of as having something in common. But what they both reveal is the way that we use what's been given to us. In the case of the world, it's what's been given to us in terms of the trust that other people have that will repay our debts. In the case of God, well, thank goodness none of us has a spiritual credit report, right? In the case of God, it's what we are given in terms of the spiritual gifts and how we use those. There's this clear statistical connection between the way we use our credit and the way we drive our cars. In the spiritual sense, there's a clear connection between the way we use the gifts God has given us and the way we build God's kingdom. There's a more fundamental reality behind it in some ways. It's our attitude toward the way we use the resources. It's our attitude toward the one who's given us the resources. If we really believe that God has given us gifts to use, we will use them well. The Bible uses money in a way that we sometimes miss. You know, it's somewhat tempting to read this and get some lessons for, in money use or investing, but we would just miss the point if we did that. In contrast with the issues, though, of death and faith, money seems very small, doesn't it? But this small thing is not small at all if we consider the way that God uses it as an illustration for much bigger things. And the much bigger thing, in this case, is the way that we use God's gift. How should Zacchaeus' example inspire us to be more effective believers? Well, first of all, his example should inspire us to be joyful and generous. And I'll tell you something, being generous with your money is oftentimes easier than being generous with your spirit. The spirit that God has given you is meant to be used as generously as Zacchaeus gave away his money. Zacchaeus probably transformed the city of Jericho with his giving. He was dealing with large sums of money, and so half of his wealth was a vast amount of money. The city of Jericho was probably changed overnight thanks to his gift. How much more then is the gift of a spiritually rich person that gives away the Spirit to all who ask? And yet some of us still maintain that bushel over ourselves and do not give it away. This is a story of how Jesus turned a very stern adult who knew his business well, a man who was given over to extortion, to stealing, to bribery, into a giddy and happy child who was generous beyond anything that was required of him. And this is exactly what God can do to our hearts as well. Turn us from being stern and worried about things into being joyful about the world that is around us and knowing that we should be generous because God has first been generous with us. That's who the person of Zacchaeus is. He's a kid with a far better understanding of what's going on in the world than he was when he was an adult. Isn't that interesting? So I encourage you, in the context of this and in thinking about Zacchaeus and who he was, be generous with the Spirit of God that is in your hearts. It does no good if that is hidden under a bushel. It does every good if that is given to others. Let's pray together.